Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Chanith Dodge, the newly appointed chairperson for Samarkand Group. By way of my background, quick overview. Experience includes retail, e-commerce, and working with boards in a number of companies, including Marks & Spencer's, Vista Village Shopping Collection, and WH Smith. I'm currently serving on the board for Robert Walters, and I also sit on the advisory council for PricewaterhouseCoopers. I'm really excited to be part of Samarkand and joining the business. It is a fantastic opportunity to take Western brands into the world's most lucrative e-commerce market, and it's really difficult to replicate that, as you'll hear. I'll be joined on the board by Keith Higgins, who has spent the last 20 years leading Unilever's e-commerce strategy, and we will also be joined by Jeanette Hearn, who's got considerable experience in international finance, having joined Smollan as global CFO in 2015. So with no further ado, I'm delighted to hand over to David and Simon, the co-founders of Samarkand, and Eva, who's the CFO.
Thanks very much, Tanith, and thanks everyone for joining. And we're very excited to have the opportunity to run through our business and introduce our business, which actually started back in 2016 when Simon and I, we spent some time in China with a friend of ours, a guy called Jason Zhang, who was a pioneer in the cross-border e-commerce industry that was emerging. Then a couple of years prior to that, he had launched a very successful Australian health brand into the Chinese market. And what he had observed was, whilst there was a lot of demand for European products, European brands, they tended to struggle with the Chinese e-commerce market more so than their Asian counterparts from Japan and Australia. So we spent time with him, and we spent time with his distribution partners, his network, the e-commerce platforms that he was working with. And we realized there was a huge opportunity if we could provide Western brands with the same kind of access to this market that they were used to for other international markets. The traditional model of working with a local distributor where you have to sign over, a large part of your margin, effective control of your brand for 3 or 5 years was quite difficult for a lot of Western brands to deal with. We returned to the UK and established Samarkand. In early 2017, we set out on our mission to make Chinese e-commerce as easy for international brands as it is for them to sell on their own website. We made a lot of progress since then. We now have close to 100 employees split between the UK and China. We have our own distribution center in South London and a third-party operated warehouse in the Shanghai Free Trade Zone. We operate 10 different e-commerce storefronts on a range of e-commerce platforms for clients in China. And we've built a proprietary technology platform that we call Nomad, which powers everything that we do. We have 166% revenue growth, and from net funding investment of the business so far of £3.3 million, we've generated close to £30 million of revenue and £14 million of gross profit. We're now looking to list onto the Aquis growth market to fuel the next stage of the development of the business. We have a great board supporting us with this. We have non-executive directors from the worlds of e-commerce, retail, finance, and HR. Jeanette Hearn is the group CFO for Smollan. Smollan are actually a strategic shareholder of ours currently. They're one of the world's largest retail service companies. They employ about 80,000 people worldwide. Amongst their clients are 70% of the world's leading consumer goods brands. Tanith Dodge, who just introduced us, is our chairperson. She has 35 years of experience in international business, former group HR director for Vista Village and group HR director for Marks & Spencer's. And Keith Higgins, 20 years of e-commerce experience with two of the world's largest consumer goods companies, e-commerce director at Procter & Gamble before moving to Unilever in 2010 as executive vice president of e-commerce. 10 years heading up their e-commerce strategy, Keith was promoted to the chief customer development officer role in March last year. Simon and myself, we've been business partners now for 12 years. Our original business in 2008 was a digital marketing company. We then created a gaming technology business. We merged those two companies together along with a third business. We listed the three entities onto the London AIM market, which was a company called Gaming Realms, where I served as the chief technology officer and Simon as the chief marketing officer. Eva Hang, our CFO, who joins us on this call, along with a number of the other members of our senior management team, our chief technology officer, our chief commercial officer, members of the software team, the marketing team, have all worked with us in previous businesses for many years. So China is by far the largest e-commerce market in the world, but it's also the most complex, particularly for international brands. Actually, this year is going to be a watershed moment where China will become the first country in the world where more retail transactions will happen online than offline. eMarketer forecasting that 52% of retail transactions will be through e-commerce in China this year. That's miles ahead of even the second place, South Korea, at 29%, or the UK, 28%. So it's obviously an attractive market for Western brands, but difficult to penetrate. There has been Western brands that have found very significant success in China. They tend to be on the larger size of the spectrum. The problems that a lot of brands may face is the lack of understanding of the market, the role that e-commerce and social media play in China. And then the traditional model of working with a local distributor can be difficult for brands to navigate. They need often for 3 to 5 year exclusive distribution deals. The lack of transparency on sales and pricing has caused brands to either retreat from the market or not to attempt it at all. And so what we've built is a technology platform and a range of managed services that encapsulates all the cost and complexity that international brands face, from translation, logistics, marketing, store operations, customs, tax, data analytics, customer service, payments, design. And our Nomad platform is integrated with all the necessary touch points for e-commerce in China. So in the West, you may have sales on Amazon, you may have sales on your own website, perhaps a few different marketplaces. China is much more fragmented. You have dominant platforms like Tmall and JD and Pindodo, but there are many others that can drive significant sales, and we're integrated with many of those. Payments. Chinese consumers are using payment methods such as Alipay, WeChat Pay, UnionPay. Visa and MasterCard have very little penetration in comparison, and again, we're integrated with those payment methods. Chinese logistics. Companies like SF Express dominate in China. DPD, UPS, the Western logistics companies have much less penetration than Chinese companies when it comes to delivery. Also, social media in China is just as important, if not more so, than it is in the West. The trends and the techniques are quite similar, but the tools and the technology are very different. They have no Facebook, no Twitter, no Instagram. Instead, they have their own local equivalents, Weibo, WeChat, TikTok, or Douyin. And again, our integrations with these platforms allows us to start to provide a similar level of understanding of Chinese social media for the brands that they're used to when dealing with Western platforms. Also, to take advantage of the cross-border e-commerce advantages, such as a 9.1% tax versus a 20% tax, expedited customs clearances, complex integrations with customs at a provincial level and also a central Beijing customs level are required, corporate structure, licenses. Nomad has all of these integrations in place, and we have the corporate structure and licenses in place too. So on this platform, we have essentially three core solutions. The first is what we call Nomad Storefront. And this allows us to build and operate e-commerce stores for our clients on the dominant e-commerce platforms in China. On the left is a brand of ours called Iconic London, which is running on, in the West, it's very popular on Instagram. In China, we operate their store on Tmall Global. On the right, another one of our brands, a premium skincare brand. We operate their store on a platform called Little Red Book, which is a bit like Instagram, but more focused on e-commerce. So Nomad is integrated with Tmall Global, with WeChat, with Little Red Book, and other platforms. And what that allows us to do is wherever the consumer is placing orders, whichever platform in China, the orders flow through to our Nomad platform. We're then able to receive those orders and fulfill them either from UK or from our bonded warehouse in China. We have 10 different storefronts. We have a a commission-based model on the fees on sales generated, and we also charge a monthly fee. So far, we have £1.9 million of contracted revenue across our clients, which we receive a monthly fee for. Second is Nomad Distribution, which is powering social commerce in China. Social commerce in China is unlike anything we've really seen here in the West yet. It is influencers, it's celebrities, it's key consumers selling to their fans and followers in a much more direct and overt way than we're used to hear or probably would even be comfortable with. It's exploded in the last few years, really quite unbelievably. $190 billion of sales in 2018 from social commerce in China, $560 billion last year. To put that into context, the US e-commerce market is around $800 billion. So it's really gone through explosive growth. It's driven a lot by the social media platforms like WeChat and TikTok in China. And there's key technologies that have evolved to support these social sellers. One of those is a platform called Youzan, which you could kind of equate it to Shopify in the West. So these social sellers use Youzan to build and operate their stores on WeChat. And Nomad is integrated with Youzan. And what that means is an influencer or celebrity like the lady featured in this video can take our products, put them into her videos, into her live streams, into her social media posts. Her fans and followers can then purchase directly. The orders flow through again into our system where we fulfill from either the UK or from China. This opens up this huge, really powerful selling channel in China to Western brands in a way they've never really had access to before. And from the influencers' point of view, we effectively drop ship the orders on their behalf. So they don't need to buy any stock. They don't take any inventory. It's all fulfilled and handled by us. We've generated over 40,000 orders through this solution already for a dozen brands and hundreds of different product lines. We operate this on a either commission-based or a buy and sell model where we buy from the brand and apply a margin and sell on. The third solution is what we call Nomad Checkout. It's a software as a service plugin. Previous two solutions are designed for brands that either have an existing presence in China and operating on a Tmall, a dominant platform, or wanting to work with social media channels within China. Nomad Checkout is for merchants who want to take their first step into the market, explore the market without big upfront costs. It's a very low cost, low friction option, ideal for smaller brands, but also can be used by large e-commerce sites who want to transact more directly with their customers in China. Tmall Global has done a great job of introducing international brands to Chinese consumers, but there is only 20,000 or so international brands on Tmall Global. When you compare that to the million or so merchants using Shopify or the 3 to 5 million merchants using WooCommerce, then it's really still quite a narrow view that they have on international retail. And the reasons for that are the shopping experience for a Chinese consumer on an overseas website is still pretty suboptimal, even though they have the advantages of knowing it's a guaranteed authentic product coming direct from the brand, potentially wider product access and even better prices. And then from the merchant's point of view, selling directly from their own website, they get to own that customer and achieve better margins as well. But like I say, the experience right now is quite difficult for a Chinese consumer to actually transact. Firstly, Chinese internet restrictions block access to sites like Facebook and Twitter, Instagram, whilst most Western sites are built with tags and scripts that reference these sites. So what that means is as the site is being loaded in China, it's being blocked and stopped and the sites load very slowly or sometimes not at all. The other is the payment methods. Chinese consumers don't really use Visa or MasterCard. They use Alipay and WeChat Pay. However, most Western websites are built with Visa and MasterCard in mind. Logistics, DHL, DPD, UPS, perfectly great solutions for Western merchants selling in Western markets. But in China, SF Express are the preferred delivery company for Chinese consumers. Also, customs, really the route for Western business, if they are to be sending parcels to China right now, is through the postal route. This may result in the parcels being stopped at customs. Between 15 and 20% in some cases may get stopped by customs and assessed for tax. And that can be 20% of the order value that the consumer then has to pay on top, plus the aggravation of having to get their parcel. The Nomad Checkout is a software as a service plugin. that solves all these issues in a single piece of technology. It strips out the block tags and scripts and moves the web assets to cached within China so that the site loads much faster. In this demonstration, reducing the load time from 52 seconds down to 5 seconds. When the consumer from China hits the website, they present it with a message that tells them that their parcel will be delivered with SF Express. Their preferred payment method is either Alipay or WeChat Pay can now be accepted as well. At checkout, they will see a Checkout for China button, in Chinese, obviously, in the styling of the host site. They'll then get a breakdown of the costs, including the product costs, the shipping and tax. They're then taken to our cross-border e-commerce platform within China, a licensed platform within China, and they can then pay using Alipay or WeChat Pay, their usual payment methods. They're immediately sent their parcel tracking information from SF Express and their order confirmation from us. They can also view their order history as well and track their parcel from merchant to their door. With our integrations into the Chinese customs ports, all the relevant taxes are paid before the parcel even arrives in China, resulting in an expedited customs clearance, meaning there's no need for a customer to pay any additional charges, and the preferential CBEC tax rate of 9.1% versus 20% could be applied on the transaction, and stoppage rates at customs are close to zero. So from a merchant's point of view, it's a very easy installation process. If they're using Shopify, it's a couple of lines of code. Plugins exist for Shopify currently. Additional ones are being developed for WooCommerce, Magento, and other popular software providers. If they want to switch on the site speed optimization, it's a simple configuration change, no need to change any code. And there's also no change to their e-commerce workflow. So when an order is placed on Nomad Checkout, it flows through to their Shopify or their other e-commerce back office. They then pick and pack that order as they would any other local order. It's addressed to a Samarkand warehouse or a consolidation point if it's in Europe. They ship it out as normal. We scan that parcel in. The SF Express label is attached for the final mile delivery, and we consolidate that with the thousands of other parcels that we're sending to China each week. There's also a enterprise version that can be integrated by larger e-commerce enterprises if they want to have their own custom flow as well. The other thing that Western businesses are used to and expect is having access to information and data at their fingertips. This is a very common pain point that brands who speak to us face if they're working with a distribution partner where they're selling to them on a wholesale basis. They know how much they've sold to the distributor, but they have no idea where that distributor sold those products onto, at what price, on what channels, whether the pricing structure has been maintained. And so with Nomad Analytics, each client gets access to their own dashboard that will tell them what revenue, what sales are by products, by e-commerce channel, by their customer demographics, if they have stock with us on consignment, where that stock is, how much is in the UK, how much is it in a warehouse in China. This level of transparency for brands is a real eye-opener and a real strong point for us as well. The other thing is that our social integration with the social media platforms allow us to start to give the brands the same kind of information that they would be used to when working on Western platforms. Obviously, the Chinese social media, the comments are made in Chinese. So what we do with that is we perform a natural language AI on the comments to give the brands a sentiment analysis to see whether the social media posts are positive or negative. And we also do provide a machine translation for individual posts as well. But it starts to make Chinese e-commerce look as understandable as Western e-commerce for these brands. I'm just going to now hand over to Simon for a few slides to take you through some of the brands that we currently work with and the brands that we're looking to work with and will work with in the future.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for taking the time to listen to our presentation today. I just wanted to pick up on some things David was saying there about our checkout product. Checkout is a super exciting product for our business. it has a very strong potential to be a disruptive force in the way that Chinese consumers are able to shop overseas on dot-coms. And it also has the potential to have a significant network effect as we deploy the technology out to hundreds and I hope thousands of Western brands. And that gives us a really good basis from which we can surface Chinese demand to Western brands. And then all the things that follow on from that, which will be things like marketing and not just the e-commerce transactions, which we're looking at the moment. So I think the future of what we're planning with the technology is super exciting. When we started 4 or 5 years ago, we used to have to work with brands on a pro forma basis because the Chinese opportunity was so kind of unusual to UK brands. It was hard to convince them of the opportunity. I think people, a lot less people need convinced of the opportunity these days, particularly when you consider the growth of the consumer in China and what's going to happen in the future with that growth of consumers. The kind of predomination of brands for us early on were small brands in skincare and cosmetics, but you can see over time, we have moved up to much bigger brands. Recently, we signed Amorevita, which is a large skincare brand, and we took over their sales in China, which was pre-existing. So they weren't a new brand to China. That demonstrates our ability to work and not just for new brands, but also brands that have got established sales. And we also recently signed Iconic London, which is an Instagram cosmetics brand. And you'll see that we're kind of focused up till now on skincare and cosmetics. And that's because of the high values and small parcels, which makes it a lot easier to execute. I think it's also the part of e-commerce that is most acceptable to Chinese consumers for cross-border e-commerce, because if you want to go into the regular market in China, you need to do animal testing. And therefore, a lot of the new brands in the West, they don't do animal testing. So going into the regular market in China is kind of closed off to them still. So Chinese consumers are very open to taking skincare and cosmetics from smaller Western brands over cross-border e-commerce. But I think we've also got a really good track record of holding on to brands and working collaboratively and well with brands over a number of years. We've got quite a number of clients who've been with us for more than 2 years, some of them 3 or 4 years. And we've also been able to grow with brands from kind of nothing to significant sales for them from a standing start with very limited investments. You know, doing business in the Chinese market is very different to doing business in Western markets. It's not like you can just arrive in China and start doing integrations against platforms and things like that. You really need to be able to do business and trade and sell things and work with people, because people just won't let you do things without doing that. So having our own brand has been really useful for that we've been able to exercise all of our technology and everything we do. But we've also seen that having our own brand, we've been very successful at making that grow in China. If you look at ProBio7, we've taken it from kind of nothing in China to 1.6 million last year. And that's kind of more growth than the brand's had since it was, you know, launched in the UK in 1995. We've also been able to substantially grow it online in the UK and Europe. We see a significant opportunity in the market for acquiring, you know, low or no growth brands in the West and putting them into our distribution network in China. We've got the people, we've got the capabilities both in the UK and in China to deliver sales both in Europe and in China. And the targets that we look at would tend to be too small for PE or VCs or even any of these Amazon reseller buyers or anything like that. We're really dealing at a level of businesses that are kind of less than £1 million of sales, but we can see have got good potential. And that comes from our experience and our on the ground knowledge of what's happening in China and what could be popular. So part of our use of proceeds will be to acquire more targets that fit with this kind of profile. I think Eva's going to take you through some of the financial highlights.
Thank you, Simon. Hi everyone, I'm Eva. Thanks for joining us today. I'm just going to take you through the financial highlights. To start with, our year end is 31st of March and the review period is April 18 to November 20. In March 19, the group achieved 4.5 million in revenue. 33% of the sales were from our ProBio 7 brand and 66% from our off-platform distribution sales, with no revenues from our Nomad Technology platform. In March 2020, the group achieved £6.8 million in revenue, 30% from ProBio 7, 50% from off-platform distribution, and 20% from our Nomad platform. The introduction of our Nomad technology revenues and a move towards more direct-to-consumer sales have seen our margins improve from 35% to 48%. In the eight-month period ending November 20, the group achieved $16 million in revenue. 10.2 was from core activities, 5.8 million from exceptional revenues in a one-off contract related to COVID. In the month of November alone, the group achieved £1.8 million in revenue. So the split for the 8 months is 25% ProBio 7, 35% distribution, and 40% Nomad technology. Again, we can see the margins improving from 48% to 63%. And with the exceptional revenues, the overall margin being 57%. I think these numbers tell a story about where the company has been, where we are today, and sort of the direction of travel. Sales at the beginning were low margin distribution sales. And as we progressed, we've moved towards more high margin technology revenues and direct to consumer sales. And we do expect this trend to continue. So in summary, from April 18 to November 20, the group has achieved £27 million in revenue, £14 million in gross profit, and it's acquired the ProBio 7 brand and the UK distribution entity for Forever Young for £2.1 million. It's been able to support the growth of our team across our offices in London and Shanghai to close to 100 employees. All of this achievement was done with very little amount of net funding of £3.3 million. We're now looking to raise £10 million in growth capital to further develop our Nomad technology platform and roll out Nomad Checkout in Europe and Asia to start with, to expand out internationally and build out our business development capabilities, to increase marketing of ProBio 7. I think Simon's spoken a lot about ProBio 7, but just to elaborate, we achieved £6.3 million in revenue for the 2 years and 8 months on very small amount of marketing spend of £700,000. And I think we really see that ProBio 7 brand being underinvested, and with proper funding, we think there's great potential for this brand. We'd like to acquire 2 to 3 brands like ProBio 7 and to replicate the success through our operational insights and sales channels in China, and to repay some debt. So I think after the IPO, the total debt will be about £1.2 million. So this is our current cap table. You can see the top three shareholders are David, Simon, and our strategic partner, Smolin. And also, some account employees hold around 15% of the share capital. It's also worth noting at this point that none of the shareholders are selling. This fundraise or this round is for growth capital only. And I'll just hand you back to David to provide a summary.
Thanks, Eva. Yeah, I'll just to wrap up, to summarise, we have the management team in place who've worked together for many years, successful businesses. We have a really fantastic board, a really relevant board in place with Tanith Dodge and Keith Higgins and Jeanette Hearn. We have all of the shareholders are remaining in. There's nobody selling any shares at this IPO, as you just mentioned, and the staff own 15% of the company outside of the founders as well. Unlike a lot of high growth businesses, we've managed to do a lot of this organically. We've taken very little capital so far, so we're very excited what a fundraise will allow us to do. We have the right partners in place. We have a contractual relationship with SF Express, the leading Chinese delivery company. Our strategic shareholders, Smolin, have 70% of the world's leading consumer goods companies as brands, as clients. Our technology is well exercised and well proven. We're integrated with a wide number of platforms and channels in China, with 3 customs ports currently, with more on the way. We have thousands of parcels of orders being processed every week from our UK and Chinese warehouses. We have a very scalable business model. We've got the solid foundation now of people and infrastructure and revenue in place. This is since 2017, and our solutions are applicable to not just European businesses or Western businesses, but any international business that wants to enter the Chinese market in this way. We also have a very good upsell and cross-sell opportunity with the solutions that we have. Nomad Checkout providing the market entry, low-cost, low-friction route, graduating brands to social selling on Nomad distribution, and then ultimately their own stores on platforms within China, and vice versa. If a store, or if a brand has stores already in China and is doing activity in social media in China, the likelihood is they will be getting traffic to their Western website, but it's not going to be converting optimally at the moment. And again, Nomad Checkout can step in and improve that. We're listing onto the Aquis market. We believe this is the right market for our business. We operate in one of the few growth industries right now in e-commerce and one of the few growing economies right now in China. We have triple-digit revenue growth, and we are with the recent events with Brexit and COVID, it's never been more important for brands to reach new markets, to reach new customers. And the way they will do that is obviously through e-commerce, and we're perfectly positioned to in that space. I think that's all for the presentation. Thanks very much for your attention and for your time. I think we'll move to Q&A, and there's an email address as well for any inquiries.
What's the typical delivery time if the product is held in the UK distribution centre? Are there any duties payable at the time of purchase in addition to sales tax? What is the revenue split between the different Nomad suites? And please describe the nature of the off-platform distribution revenues.
So the delivery times can be as little as 3 days, 3 or 4 days. So if we receive, depending on the flight, but our average delivery time is 8.4 days, more or less. So it depends when the order arrives, it's picked, packed. And if there's a flight, if it's sent to the consolidated that day, it can be with the consumer within 3 or 4 days. Typically, we say 5 to 8 days is our normal delivery time. The duties and the cross-border e-commerce tax, there's really two levels. There's 9.1% for most consumer goods, and then there's it's 23% for certain luxury items. That is the only duty that they will pay. They will never have to pay a secondary fee when it arrives in customs. Our integrations with the Chinese customs authorities means that it's already pre-calculated and prepaid before it arrives there. It's a good point because prior to the formalization of cross-border e-commerce, a lot of this trade, a lot of these consumer orders coming in from overseas through the mail, they weren't able to track or tax these goods, and so that is why this cross-border e-commerce system was established. Since 2014, the number of cross-border zones has increased from 1 to 105 across China. So it's very much the way that they want this trade to happen in the future, now and in the future. And that's how we've integrated, and that's how we provide that.
So the revenue splits for the 8 months ending November 20 for Nomad was 10% storefront and 90% Nomad distribution. So the social commerce side. Nomad Checkout was launched at the end of November with not much, very little amount of sales. So we definitely see the growth in Nomad revenues in that area going forward. The question around off-platform distribution sales. Off-platform distribution sales represent B2B sales to our UK retail, so into Harrods, Selfridges, or B2B sales to Chinese platforms, as well as direct-to-consumer sales on Amazon.
You mentioned the reasons why most of the products on the platform are cosmetics. What other product ranges would benefit from being on the Nomad platform?
Yeah, health and beauty are two of the key areas that we focus in, partly because Simon mentioned to sell domestically within China, if you're a skincare brand, you need to test on animals. If you're a health brand, you may have to go through the equivalent, the CFDA approval. Cross-border e-commerce opens this up so that you don't need to test on animals, you don't need to relabel your package, you don't need to change your packaging. So certain goods are more suitable: health, beauty, luxury, fashion, mother and baby. Food and drink are all popular categories, partly because of these limitations being lifted, but partly because those are what Chinese consumers want to buy from overseas. So we, because of where we're based at the moment in the UK, we have a fairly UK-centric portfolio and in health and beauty, but part of this raise we'll be expanding our footprint into continental Europe and other countries to broaden our geographic and category focus as well. But those
I think,
are the,
I think
those
if you think things. About if you think about anything that benefits from provenance and knowing that you're buying direct, then that is a strong candidate for this kind of model. So things like wine, whiskey, anything like that, where you might want to be, or it's something that's a limited edition. That's where I think there's also a big opportunity, is that at the moment it's very difficult to launch something globally at the same time and be in China at exactly the same time as you might be in your Western markets. Whereas if you use the cross-border e-commerce system and our technology, you would be able to do a combined kind of launch. So if I'm thinking particularly like if you think of limited edition sneakers or something like that, that, you know, our technology would allow you to do something like that. So there are lots of possibilities. And there's a thing called the positive list of goods that the Chinese government allows in. And there are also some goods that are absolutely not allowed through cross-border e-commerce. But the good news is that the positive list keeps expanding.
Thank you. If you buy a brand and it sells outside China, is this revenue in the figures? Or if not, how is the original cost of the brand allocated?
Shall I say that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, the first part. Well, we typically, Eva can do the finance bit, but I was going to say we typically buy brands that we would be buying brands that don't have significant sales in China, or if they do, we're probably already involved in them, and actually being able to grow sales both in the West and in China is something that we can do and are interested in doing.
All the revenues around brands are included in the brand ownership segment. So if it's sold in Europe or in China, that it both included in the brand ownership segment of their financials. I hope that answers your question.
Given management's previous experience on AIM with Gaming Realms, why choose Aquis Exchange to list on?
Yeah, good question. When we first started to pre-market this IPO, we spoke to a few different institutions, and there was a very positive response that we had for the Aquis Exchange. Once we started to look into it more, we felt that the timing was actually right for us to look at Aquis. It's a newer market. It's a growing market. It has a slightly different model, a bit more innovative and disruptive, which also appealed to us. It looks like it's gaining more support from institutions as well, and also the trading platforms like AJ Bell and Hargreaves Lansdown starting to integrate with it as well. So we felt now might be a good time for us to be a bigger fish in a smaller pond than go on to AIM and be the opposite, I suppose. So we're quite excited about Aquis, actually. We're very excited about Aquis.
What is the gross margin contribution from the Nomad businesses?
So just for the 8-month period ending November 20, the range is around 65% to 70% gross margin profit for technology.
Thank you. This is a great idea. Why do you think it's not been done already? What barriers are there to someone copying you? And the next question, your different lines will have different gross margins. Own brand will be full revenue and retail margins, whereas some other lines will be high margin commissions. Will you be providing a breakdown of these splits going forward?
I'll do the first one. Eva, you do the second one. Oh, and yeah. Simon, chip in if you want on the first one. But I think the reason why, cross-border e-commerce is a relatively new, it's really was kind of formalized in 2014. So it's relatively new from that point of view. It also, from a Chinese company's point of view, you know, it's there's lots of brands coming to them that want to enter the market. And we've taken a different approach. We've taken a Western view and approach, and we couldn't have done any of this. We couldn't just rock up to the Chinese customs port and ask to do an integration or a payment method or SF Express to do logistics. We've only been able to build the technology in lockstep with the trade that we've done. So, you know, we've got a lot of dirt under our fingernails building this business, doing the trade, negotiating trades in the early days with platform buyers, Alibaba, just to get trade flowing so that we could actually build the technology. The technology was always the vision, but you just can't just show up and do that. So, you know, it's taken four, almost 5 years for us to be able to be at the point where we have everything in place now. So I think there's some significant barriers to entry. I think also the fact that we have the partnerships with some of the companies like SF Express, who are, you know, we've got one large scale technology project deployed with them already. We're working on others. We know where we're at in terms of early mover, fast mover kind of territory. So I think we've got a good start. Of course, companies will come, and that's why we want to accelerate and put as much clean air between us as we can. But and then Eva.
Yeah, just on the segments reporting side. So in the prospectus, I'm not sure if you've seen or been sent the prospectus, but in the note, there's a breakdown of our brand ownership revenue and the cost of sale, and also Nomad technology and distribution. And those are the three segments that we'll be reporting going forward as well. Hopefully that answers the question.
Thank you. And how do you acquire new clients, and at what cost?
So, yeah, new clients. Our business development director is a guy called Jack Porteous. He was the head of e-commerce for the China Britain Business Council. So any UK brands, at least, that have looked at China in the last 3 years are well known to Jack. So we have a good network for new brand, new business development. We have a very good reputation, I'm pleased to say, with our existing clients, and we often get referral, word of mouth from, it's a relatively small world, the export managers and brand owners of these companies, so we get good referral. We do some outreach as well. We do some PR and those kind of things, but we haven't needed to. We haven't engaged in any kind of digital marketing spends. We will start to do that with our Nomad Checkout product. We will be reaching out on those kind of channels for that product, but at the moment we're trying not to turn away, but there's more demand, especially with what's happening with Brexit and COVID and people wanting to find new markets. Our business development team has never been busier. And that's why Nomad Checkout is a really exciting product for us, because we can put a marker in a brand. They might not be ready yet for a full e-commerce solution on Tmall Global. We can get a marker on that brand, our technology installed, start to see the data and the trends and give them a route to graduate to that. So it's a
I think if you're looking for a kind of CPA cost of like onboarding a significant client, it's kind of like it's a sunk cost already in our BD team, and any on costs from that client are funded as part of the contract, so there's no kind of like time period for recovery. We have kind of continual outreach to raise our profile, because it's really kind of story based marketing. But when you look at checkouts, Dave just mentioned, it's a different kind of product, and that probably will get to the point where it's got more of a kind of classic CPA and be driven more, because, for example, it probably will be in app stores, e-commerce app stores in the future, and there may be a cost associated with driving installs on that. I suppose watch the space on what kind of CPA is for installs on checkout.
And that is part of some of the use of proceeds. When we talk about the rollout of Nomad Checkout, it includes the CPAs and the digital marketing spend that we're anticipating doing for that.
And the next question is: have you already identified the 2 to 3 brands you mentioned you wish to purchase? What's the acquisition strategy here?
We've got a good idea of the types of brands that we want to acquire. Generally, they're brands that we know and we may have worked with in this or other businesses or had exposure to. Our first set of brands I expect to be relatively straightforward and easy for us to acquire. As for the future, the great thing about what we're doing with building all of our technology is we get a kind of front row seat on all of the brands in the market. And I think as business partners, we will continue. I think we will be more attractive than PE in the future. That's partly why coming onto the public markets attractive for us because it gives us an ability to do things quickly and at speed, to raise more money to do more acquisitions if we think that's appropriate. And then I think in the future, you know, we're also building a lot of value in the business by, we're interested in getting brands that are capable of being successful both in China and in the West. And that's very attractive, I think, to Chinese capital, who are definitely interested in brands that have both success in China and in the West. And also, you know, I think that our capability of deployment in the West would be attractive, because I used to always think our job was about selling brands to, you know, to China. But actually, a big part of our job is actually helping Chinese platforms and Chinese businesses work with Western businesses. It's as much, you know, it's as much of a service that we give to our Chinese business partners as it is to Western brands. So it's a two-way thing.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good point. With, you know, I talked earlier about the difficulties that Western brands have dealing with distributors in China. It's actually vice versa as well. A lot of the time, the Chinese distributors have trouble with the Western brands. They don't act in the way that they expect. They have issues with supply chains that they wouldn't expect. So there's definitely a two-way element to it.
Thank you. What are the most important barriers that need to be overcome to grow the business going forward? And how did you determine that 10 million was the right amount to raise? Why not 20 million, say?
Well, we, as you've seen, we've done a lot with 3.3 million already. 10 million is a number that allows us to move the business to the next level. Part of going onto a public capital market is so that we can come back in future to continue the growth and accelerate it further. So we believe 10 million is enough for us for this phase. Barriers for growth. You know, there's not a big capex requirement for us. Our technology is, you know, it's cloud based. From the logistics and fulfillment point of view, we can implant our technology into a warehouse in continental Europe. It's label printers, it's scanners, it's all it's the software that's what's needed. So we can roll that out relatively easily, either through our own warehouses or with the third parties. So there's not a big capex requirement there. When it comes to bringing on more clients, there is a headcount requirement to operate these stores, but those are covered by the fees plus a margin, in fact. So, you know, bringing on more clients is scalable for us as well.
We work so well together. What I was going to say was that, kind of philosophically about, coming onto a public market, you know, we think we're using a growth, you know, the public market for what it is. We're a growth company coming to raise growth capital, and we hope to raise more growth capital in the future as our business expands. I mean, you can see from the cap table that so far we've preserved significant amounts of equity from the way we've run the business, and you know, we expect to continue to do that as the business grows. And the other thing is that we have a strong employee shareholder base, so we have a super engaged team who are coming to market, and everyone's locked in. So I think it's a bit unusual the way we're coming to market, but I don't actually think just because it's unusual or not the convention makes it wrong. Actually, I think it's the right thing.
Yeah, the convention seems to be private equity companies coming to IPO to cash in their chips, whereas we're doing it to grow the business.
I see how doing the trade has helped the technological innovation. However, shouldn't the focus now be on the software platform rather than looking to add new own products? Doesn't doing both confuse the investment story?
Well, it's a good question. It's one that comes up a lot. I mean, we operate in a world where already more than 50% of retail transactions are happening online. So we see this distinction between brand and technology, not to offend, but as a bit of an outdated concept, I suppose. Companies like the Hut Group, Amazon, you know, they have very successfully shown brand ownership and technology work actually better together than apart. So our view is that brands of the future that have technology as part of their DNA are going to be the more successful ones. They're fighting on an unlevel playing field. So maybe it's confusing now, but I don't think it will be. I think it will become more and more.
Yeah, and I think that comes back to quite it is definitely, and it's you're absolutely correct. It's that, you know, singular kind of focus. Are you a SaaS business? Are you a DTC product business? All that. I think that's a very Western perspective on how businesses work, and it doesn't really reflect the challenges we face in China and the opportunities in China. It's not binary like that. And I also think, you know, I think they're two great opportunities, and the two are very complementary. And, you know, if you're worried about us being dragged off in different directions, you know, the entire senior team are technologists, so it's not really I don't worry about the development. And it's, you know, every bit of development we do is actually deployed first on what we're doing with Probiol 7. So, you know, I think it's a good recipe for growth for the future.
While improving, liquidity on Aquis is not as good as on AIM, and some brokers don't provide access. Do you foresee an eventual move to AIM or the LSE as the company grows?
Good question. Possibly. I guess there's also other international exchanges, you know, Hong Kong or that could be in our future. But I think from my point of view, we've been had quite a lot of conversations and interaction with Aquis. We see what's coming down the pipeline from there. You know, they've just introduced this market maker scheme, which is having very positive impacts. The brokerage platforms will be integrating very soon. So we feel like we could be at the front of a queue that's going to get longer and longer. I know VSA, who are, you know, our corporate advisors on this, have a list of IPOs coming onto Aquis. So I think, you know, watch this space for Aquis.
Yeah, and I think we've spent time with the management team at Aquis, and we very much buy into their analysis of what the capital markets are doing and what the kind of deficiencies of the current way the capital markets work in the UK, and what the opportunity is for the Aquis market. And we think it's absolutely 100% right and kind of inevitable. So that's why we've chosen Aquis at this point.
Thank you. And that's the end of questions. David, do you have any closing remarks?
I didn't, other than thanks everyone's attention. If there is any questions further, more subscription related, you have the details on the screen now. And any more technical questions about the business, we'll obviously send it to that address as well, and we can respond on, you know, business related questions.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.